Hello, and welcome back to another episode of In Phase, the Cycle Syncing Podcast.
Yes, welcome to In Phase. My name is Lauren Cortizo.
And I'm Robin Dibovic.
And In Phase is a podcast, a community, and a space for women who are passionate about all phases of their bodies, their cycles, and their lives.
I love that intro. And you wouldn't believe how long it has taken me and Lauren to get that right every time. Every time we're checking our Google Doc and we're like, what is it? Bodies, phases. No. Cycles, aligning. Wait.
Yeah. And just know it's intentional every single time, actually.
We did that on purpose.
There's that. This is the first time we've recorded in a long time because our first six episodes were recorded kind of not a while ago.
They were like, a while ago, though. We batch recorded before we launched the podcast so that we were able to focus on the launch and the technical side of it rather than recording. But now those episodes are out in the world. So if you've listened to them from everything from intro to cycle syncing to hearing Lauren's birth story, my engagement story, thoughts on postpartum, thoughts on having kids, the history of periods, how the patriarchy has stolen the sacred joy of periods from us. Thank you for listening. If you haven't, go back and listen to those. But we are now moving on to the next episode and the next phase of this podcast. We're going to be recording in real time, which is so much more fun, in my opinion, because we can talk about everything that has been going on in our lives and in the episodes.
Exactly. And then we'll be bringing guests soon, too.
We are going to start having guests soon, which is really, really exciting for us. As you guys know, if you've been listening and been on the short yet fun journey with us so far, we are just two girls out here learning. We are not experts in this space, but we are two women who are passionate about being women and passionate about taking hold of what we have, the information we have access to, and bringing it into culture, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so to Robin's point, it's like we're excited because we're just learning along with all of you. And so when we have guests, it'll be a really fun time for us to ask questions and to dive into some topics and then hopefully also get questions from you all about things that you want to learn about.
It's Sunday morning in sunny Los Angeles, California right now. It's gorgeous out. Lauren has her tea. I have my coffee. We're just two ladies who sat at my kitchen table eating some banana bread upstairs and talking about endometriosis, getting ready for this episode.
Yeah. Before we jump into that, though, Robin just casually said, we're just two ladies eating banana bread. I just want to stop and double click on that. We were not just eating banana bread. Robin has become a kitchen mad scientist. Robin, in partnership with ChatGPT, came up with your own like banana bread recipe that includes protein.
Yes.
What is it? How many grams of protein per slice?
So it's 8 to 10 grams of protein per slice because it's made with whole wheat flour, with Greek yogurt, and with vanilla protein powder. And then only like 200 calories per slice.
Bonkers.
So this shit is gold.
It's quite delicious.
And it tastes
too,
so good. So I'm happy to share the recipe if anyone would like it, but it is money. But I told Lauren as she came over and I like opened the oven as she walks in, I was like, do you want coffee? Taking banana bread out of the oven. I was like, listen, I'm reclaiming homesteading for liberal women because I don't think that ballerina farm is the only person who gets to bake and create joy for her friends and family and herself.
Amen. We should be allowed to spend some time in the kitchen too because we want to.
Hell yeah.
Actually, did I tell you this? Do you know what I've been doing the past like 4 weeks?
What?
Maybe 5 weeks? Every Sunday now, I buy a full chicken.
Wait, I roasted a chicken last week too?
So I buy a whole chicken and I've learned how to like spatchcock the whole thing.
Well, spatchcock is one of my favorite words on the planet.
It's a fantastic word.
Yes.
Because really, like, it could mean so many things.
Yes.
Just by the sounds of it. So I buy a full ass chicken, spatchcock it. I then like have a huge, huge like broth pot. And I'm cutting celery, carrots, onions, garlic, doing like a ton of veggies. And I put the full chicken in there. And then I cook the full chicken for like 2 hours. Then
In the pot, in the broth. Okay.
And then I take the bones out. Like, we'll take the chicken out, put that in like a little Tupperware to go back in the fridge.
Right.
And then I put the bones back in. I crack a ton of them. So like you get like
you're
the bone marrow
stock
in there. And then I make the stock for like another like 10 hours. And I've been doing this.
Your ballerina farm.
Straight up.
Your emo skateboard farm.
I'm emo skateboard farm.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is, no, ballerinas are cool. I'm not going to be a Timothée Chalamet apologist over here. People care about the ballet. People care about the opera.
Exactly.
And
huge fans.
And emo skateboard farm would be just as cool as ballerina farm.
It would be just as cool. And we ate a lot of chicken over there, apparently.
That's funny, too, though, because you have been a vegetarian up until you got pregnant.
No, I literally was a
pescatarian. And now you're over here, like, breaking bone marrow.
It's crazy. I was a pescatarian for 12 years.
Pescatarian. I apologize.
No,
fam.
But yeah, 12 years. Didn't eat a single bit of meat and then was pregnant and my body was like craving it. And since then,
listen to your body. I know. Always listen to your body.
So true. And then since then, I've just been on the journey. And it's been funny because so Carmen, she's been like, we're giving her just like regular food now.
Yes. That is Lauren's daughter, in case people are new here.
Yes. Yeah. She's 11 months old. And so now she's like,
she's the light of our lives.
Light of our lives. And now she's eating solids. And part of the thing with cooking is that like, you don't want them to eat too much food with salt because you don't want to have them like be accustomed to like too much salt, which is such an American problem.
And also, here's how you know I don't have kids, because we don't want to cook a lot of things with salt. And my head go, yeah, we don't want her bloated.
It's that. Yeah, we're very concerned.
I truly was over here. I was like, oh, yeah, she'd be puffy.
Just
so
about
go on. Right. Getting accustomed to that. No, that's it.
Yep,
for sure.
Yep, exactly that. Exactly that. Yeah. So it's been funny where I'm like, okay, so boiling chicken is a great way to do that, to make it. And then
I've learned about the practice of boiling chicken when I came back from Mexico and was so sick that I couldn't eat anything besides boiled chicken and rice for like 3 weeks.
Oh, that's a different situation.
Yeah, very different
that's
situation. You know what? We're not going to talk about that on the pod. Okay.
Are you sure?
I've got some self-respect and I am some semblance of dignity where I cannot speak about that experience on a podcast.
I love it. It's fair. That's fair. It's very, very fair. So we're just like, we're over here cooking.
Dude, I love that. There is, it's funny because I picked up baking specifically. Because remember when I was telling you about the scones recently.
Yes.
I made
yes.
scones last week. I'm a 1950s housewife, but in 2026 in a liberal feminist body. You know what I mean? I'm making scones and then I'm getting on a microphone talking about the woes and the trials and also the joy that is being a woman.
Yeah. Because there's something different about like, I have to cook versus I'm choosing to cook.
Oh, first. If
it's
someone
a totally
told me,
different situation.
If someone told me I had to cook, you bet your ass I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
But usually when I'm cooking or when I'm baking, I'm actually doing it just for me.
Mm.
I did the coolest thing. I felt like such a like little community member last weekend when I made these scones in the morning. I just got like hankering for baking. And I used to bake a lot, but it used to be when my mental health was very low.
Sure.
Because I started
those
during the pandemic.
Correlated. Yes.
As a hobby. And that was when I was living alone. I wasn't allowed to see or speak to anyone for a year. So I would just be baking all day, every day. And I would post about it on Instagram and my friends knew. And so when they would see me like baking and baking and baking, I would get calls and be like, hey, saw you made 3 things. Are you okay?
Yeah.
And I was like, not so much. But also, do you want this new recipe for these like almond maple butter muffins? So it was like pros and cons. But my mental health right now is great. So I'm like baking on a high. So I made these scones last weekend. But with baking, it's 2 people who live in my house and we don't need an entire batch of scones. So I had like the most wholesome weekend or Sunday, last Sunday. I woke up, made some scones. Harry's in the living room playing guitar. He's a musician, so he's constantly like banging on that thing. Sometimes it's really fun. Other times I'm like, shut up. No, I'm just kidding. It is lovely. But you're also married to a musician,
no,
so
I
you get it.
Yes. Sometimes you want background music and sometimes you want to be able to choose the background music and you can't always do that.
Exactly.
And that's challenging.
Or sometimes I'm like, I'm watching Law & Order SVU. Turn off the electric guitar.
Yep.
But on a Sunday morning when like there's coffee in the kitchen and I'm making scones and my fiance is playing the guitar in the other room, I'm like, this is sick. Especially when I can put in requests. Always Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, by the way.
Oh, great.
Always.
Do you sing it together? Do you guys harmonize? What is it like?
So here's what I'll say as I resituate myself to tell this story. Yes. And what I've found is that's a really hard song to sing and harmonize, which you don't think when you're screaming it in the car. You're like, oh, this fucks. I'm amazing at this.
Yep.
Then when you're sitting there as someone else is playing the guitar and you're reading the lyrics on like a phone for karaoke and trying to, I'm like, when do I start here? Do I, you gotta, no, hold on, let me try again. You gotta pass.
Yep.
That song's tough.
It's a hard one. Okay. Is there a song that you feel like really confident singing? Meaning one where you're like, when you're ready to like, let it rip. You
absolutely.
Gotta just like let something out. What is that one?
One song that I can bring the house down with in karaoke. And it is You Were Meant For Me by Jewel.
I hear the clock.
Yeah. It's 6 a.m. I feel so far from where I've been. That one. So that's just a little snippet. That's a musical taste for you guys. If anyone wants to go to karaoke with me, I love karaoke.
And one of my favorite things to know about a person is what their go-to karaoke song.
What's yours? Emo.
It's one of two.
Is it Paramore?
It's one of two. What's All the Small Things by Blink-182.
I was just going to say.
Because it's so fun. Everyone can do that. Na-na.
Yeah.
But then also, depending on my mood, sometimes it's just Black Eyed Peas.
Money. What song?
Tonight's the night.
Let's live it up.
I got my money drank. No, that one. Is it money? I got, is that the right lyric?
We need to get into a karaoke studio and figure that one out.
We should. We should. But yeah, I always like love knowing like what's your go-to song.
It says a lot about people. See, underrated. So here's the pros and cons of Jewel. Underrated. People forget about it. When you put a song on that people have forgotten about that they know and love, but they haven't listened to or they don't hear that often. The only problem is it is a little bit slower. So you have to get people in the mood to like sway and potentially like sing, scream along in the background. But it's not the let's live it up. Hey,
yeah, totally. Yeah, like I once did a terrible thing where I went up on the karaoke stage and I did Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas.
Okay, yeah.
Which has, I think it's 45 measures of just guitar.
Yeah. And then so what do you do during that time?
That's the question.
Well, the reason I know that song that you say it's funny that it has, or it's funny that you say it has 45 measures of guitar, because I know that song from playing Guitar Hero in high school at Ryan Curtin's house.
There you go. Yeah. It's so funny how so many songs are like Guitar Hero songs,
yes,
too.
That is 100% one of them.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
that's fair.
Okay, wait. So back to my scones. Speaking of Carry On My Wayward Son.
Yep.
Which has nothing to do with the scones. But I baked the scones, had a beautiful Sunday morning. We're going to the farmer's market afterwards, which, by the way, we have to talk about farmer's markets because you mentioned you're going to one after this. And I was like, oh, I've got extra scones. Let me just drop them off at our neighbor/best friend's house, Lauren and Mike, like on the way. They're still warm. They're glazed with this like lemon glaze. I didn't tell them I was coming over, knocked at the door. You could tell like they opened the door with like bedhead. They're like, who the fuck knocks on a door on a Sunday morning? Like, is this someone trying
to sell
windows or something? And I got to be like, hey, made you scones, just dropping them off and then going to the farmer's market.
So great.
And I was like, damn, this is community. This is like, it reminds me of like growing up in Wisconsin, like our neighbors were always bopping around. Oh, I made extra
cookies, extra blondies.
Yeah,
totally. That's the thing I like, actually wish I were a baker because of that. Like,
listen, it's never too late.
I know. The thing is,
you cook.
I love cooking. Yeah. I will say I went through a phase, like a very, very short phase where I was like, I wish I were a baker so I could share things, but I don't feel like a baker. So instead, I'm going to make hot sauce because I could like
this
bottle.
This is a phase of yours?
This is a phase
of
mine.
A hot sauce phase.
Oh, yeah. I had like big jars and I was buying all different types of chilies and peppers
fermenting
them. But it lasted like, it was like a 3 month phase.
That's a long enough phase. Do you have any Gemini in your chart?
No, I don't.
Because Geminis are known for starting new hobbies. And I always say that Geminis are interested and interesting. So they're very curious. Mm. They like to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And to know things. They like the hot goss, but they also are just very interested in other people and kind of the world around them. But they also are interesting in that they oftentimes have a lot of different hobbies or interests. But what comes with that is oftentimes like starting something new and then like jumping to the next thing.
Yeah.
Like if you looked around my house, you would see all of my hobbies laid out in front of you that like in different corners of the house that I have started and then put down. Watercolor painting.
Yep. Okay.
Photography.
Yep.
Baking. If you look over in the corner, you guys can't see this on camera, but in the corner, those are my roller skates, those yellow ones there. Love those.
You should bust those back out.
Yeah, those are really cool. So that was a hobby for a while.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah. Triathlons. I guess that's a hobby. Yeah. I've got a smattering all over the place.
Yeah. I feel like I resonate with that deeply.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always trying something new, then onto the next kind
Hell
of
yeah. Vibe. And what's the point of living if not trying new
totally.
Things, you know?
What's your current hobby of choice?
I guess the baking is coming back into the fray. Also, the watercolor painting is new.
Yeah.
That's a really fun thing to do on like a Sunday afternoon outside. Like I have been also really into CANN brand. But they're so like crack one open. I like to turn it into like a little like cocktail set, put in a wine glass. I sip those outside. It's only like 2 to 5 milligrams. So you're not getting like stoned. You just have like a nice little buzz and you're painting. And that's been super fun.
Hey, do you know what? I'm in an oil painting phase right now.
Oh my God, yeah.
I took an oil painting class for the first time like a month ago and I loved it.
That's so cool
of you. So now I have oil paints. And the other night I was oil painting and watching The Secret Wives of Mormon Wives. It was a really interesting sort of juxtaposition to do something like so wildly calming.
And wholesome.
And wholesome while there's just like chaos in the background.
I fucking love that
show. It really ripped.
And
that show, ooh,
I was listening to a podcast yesterday with Jessie Draper on Call Her Daddy, talking about, because you know her and Jordan are getting divorced now.
Oh yeah, and she's spilling all the tea.
Well, she always spills all the tea
about Jordan.
She always spills it all, and I love that about her. She's like, this
she's
is my job.
Real.
I'm an open book.
Yep.
And here we go.
Yep, she's very real.
Yeah, maybe she can come on our podcast.
Jessie, I would love that. Yeah. She rocks.
Yeah, Jessie, I don't know if you've ever dealt with like cycle irregularity or anything of the sort, but we would love to have you on In Phase Podcast.
Come chat.
Please.
Come chat.
Wait, but I do want to talk about this being the first episode since we've launched and then just what it's been like since we launched the podcast. Because
yeah.
we haven't seen each other since we've launched, which is crazy. We have weekly meetings, multiple weekly meetings. We're doing edits. We're talking social, all of these things. Also, I'd be remiss to not mention that in launching the podcast, we have gotten such incredible help from community in getting it off the ground and either joining the team long term or joining the team short term. So Cami Arnold-Scott has edited all of the first 6 episodes of our podcast.
Shout out.
Which
literally
is
literally a queen.
A queen, which is not an easy task because each of our episodes was like 2 hours and she had to call that down to like an hour episode each time. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of work and we really, really appreciate her. She has a podcast with her wife, Taryn, called Staying Up Pod.
Listen if you don't. It's so fun.
It's so good. Fun. The whole premise is that they just, because they are a lesbian couple, they just get to have a sleepover with their best girlfriend every single night and stay up and giggle. So it's just those two giggling and it's like, You feel like you're having a slumber party with two of your besties.
Delightful. It's also worth just like giving them both a follow. Both of their content is just like lovely.
Them.
They're like really good peeps.
Oh God, yeah. And if you want any beauty tips or health and wellness tips as well, Cami is incredible. She also deals with PMDD, has had fibroids, talks about her fertility journey and her and Taryn's IVF journey. So eventually we want to have them on the podcast and talk about that. But they're amazing. She's amazing. So thank you, Cami. And then also Queen Sydney.
Our
social guru. If you're seeing anything online out on the internet that is designed or gorgeous or branded in any way for In Phase, that was created by Sydney on our team, who is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, she's so lovely. She's like basically become like our creative director.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she just gets it.
Yeah.
She fully gets it. And she's become like a really, really core part of our team.
Yeah.
And to your point, Robin, it's just like, doing any project like this when we all have, you know, full-time jobs and other things to do, having help from the community is so crucial. And everyone is busy, but everyone is still willing to help, which has just been, like, really delightful.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, anytime there's, like, a new project and people, like, show up to support, I always feel, like, truly overwhelmed with gratitude because attention is one of the kindest and most generous things you could give someone. And so the fact that there's people not only, like, helping make this podcast come to life, but also listening – it's pretty overwhelming.
I know. So we've been so humbled in the past 6 weeks about this. I think especially like launching the first few episodes and just getting the feedback that we did from people was incredible and so wonderful and also so validating that we're doing something that matters to so many people. I was just, when we launched the first episode, I was overwhelmed with people responding either on Instagram story or shooting me a text that I hadn't heard from or connected with in years. Like I had people reach out that I worked at an ad agency with in Minneapolis 15 years ago, people from college or like a friend of a friend responding and saying like, I have been wanting to talk about this and haven't had a space, or I've been wanting to learn more about this, or thank you for doing this. And it was just like, oh, it was such an emotional few days launching the podcast. I like one had like a martini one night. So I was like a little bit more emotional, but I came home and I was just crying.
Yeah.
I was like in tears, and I was like, look at this message. This is so nice. No, but it really, it's meaningful to get such positive feedback for something that is so inherently vulnerable for both of us.
Your point in general, it's like being vulnerable and sharing so many personal things is very, very scary to me. It's like super not how I'm wired. Like I love being a great listener. I think it's one of my best qualities.
You are a great listener. It's a really good quality.
But that I don't always like to necessarily put myself out there. I can with invitation, but without invitation, it's usually not something that I'm accustomed to doing or doesn't feel natural. And so this has been a really fun personal challenge to be willing to do that. Should we talk about this week's episode?
Yes. Yes. With that being said, we are talking about endometriosis this week. I think it's going to be a really important episode. And I also think it's going to be a very emotional episode. Lauren and I have been talking about this for weeks now. We've been doing a lot of research. For those of you who don't know, March is Endometriosis Awareness Month. So we wanted to launch this episode in March. It's coming out on the last day of March. Happy last day of March, by the way. April Fool's tomorrow. Get your jokes ready. But this is such an important topic for so many women. And as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Lauren and I are just learners in the space, and neither one of us have endometriosis.
Right, right. So while we've done a lot of research and we want to bring you along to the journey as we're learning about it, we wanted to also make sure that there are stories from people who actually have endometriosis and who can share their experience. So throughout this episode, we actually have listeners, like community members like you, who are sharing their stories and sharing their experience.
Let's get into it.
Okay. Okay.
So as I mentioned, today we're talking about endometriosis. It is a condition that, as Lauren mentioned, affects 1 in 10 women, and yet somehow still kind of lives in the shadows of culture, of conversation, and of the medical sphere. It's misunderstood, it's misdiagnosed, it's minimized. And if you've ever been told that period pain is normal, oh, that's just normal cramping, you just have to live with it, you're just sensitive, try a heating pad, try Advil, this episode could possibly be for you. And if you don't have endometriosis, this episode still really matters because someone you love, not probably, but surely does, knowing that 10% of women, and that's, I think, of the diagnosed community, has right. this condition.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So let's start with, what is endometriosis? Endometriosis is a condition where tissue that is similar to the lining of the uterus, or similar to the uterus, called endometrium, starts growing outside of the uterus, aka where it is not naturally live or naturally show up. It can grow on the ovaries, on the fallopian tubes. It's most common anywhere within the pelvic cavity, so close to or on your reproductive organs. However, endo is a full body condition, and this uterine lining, or tissue similar to this uterine lining, can grow anywhere in the entire body, including the bladder, the intestines. I know someone who has had it full throughout their colon. I know another friend who has had it in their lungs. I read a story recently about a woman who has endo in her nose. Because this tissue behaves like the uterine lining, meaning that it thickens, it breaks down, and it bleeds in the same way that your lining of your uterus does during every period, that when you have your hormonal cycle or your period, that tissue behaves in the same way at the same time. So this woman, when she had her period, she would also experience nosebleeds because her endo tissue in her nose was shedding and bleeding there. But the problem is the tissue has nowhere to go when it bleeds outside of the uterus.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was like, right, it's crazy. So it literally, as Robin said, it thickens, it breaks down, it bleeds. It has nowhere to go. So then your body basically has to go into like full crisis mode when this is happening. So this leads to inflammation. It leads to scar tissue. It leads to adhesions. There's moments where literally your organs can be sticking together. And it's one of these things where it's been categorized as just like a pelvic issue.
Yep.
And as you've said, it's such a full body experience that it's dramatically impacting people's entire body when this happens.
Yeah. And I think another misconception about endo is that it only flares up or is problematic around your period or around menstruation. And that's not true. For many women, or for most women, it is most painful and most problematic in conjunction with your cycle, yes. So during your luteal phase and during your menstrual phase, that inflammation can be worse. However, it's an inflammatory condition. So anything that is inflammatory in your body for different women can set this off and cause you to have what they call an endo flare-up. So for some women, that can be caffeine, it can be unhealthy eating, it can be alcohol, it can be stress. So this is a full body, full lifestyle condition that can affect women every single day, not just around their periods. Symptoms and signs. So it can look different for everyone, but there's a few core identifiers for endo that are fairly common or consistent for most women. One is severe pelvic pain, and not just like, oh, I have a cramp that could require like a couple Advil when I have the first or second day of my period. But we're talking about pain that during your period, or again, it could be not during your period as well. This is, it's so widely fluctuating, which makes it hard to talk about, diagnose, and then obviously find a cure for or treatments for as well. But In terms of pain, we're talking about pain that stops you from functioning. Oftentimes, endopain feels like pain that radiates around to your back and your legs, and pain that doesn't respond to typical painkillers.
Yeah. And I think in general, too, what you've mentioned is really important is that we've normalized, quote unquote, painful periods in this culture, and your period should never be painful. Cramps are normal. For there to be a little bit of discomfort, like, that's okay. That's considered normal, but it should never be painful.
And we're talking like pain, like cramping. I think we all know that cramping can be uncomfortable, but when those cramps veer into, oh my God, this is painful to the point that is disrupting what I'm doing on a day to day, I think that's a good marker for you to, for there a question to be raised there. I'll also say that we've normalized period pain in society as something that is just like, yeah, that's normal. But the fact is there's a difference between common and normal. It's common. It period pain like this is common. It does not mean it's normal for women or that it's something that is natural and should be happening in your body. So that those are two things to just kind of keep in mind there. So again, painful periods, often that worsen over time. So the older that you get or more time that goes on, if your periods are getting worse, this could be a symptom of endometriosis, as that means that that uterine-like lining, that endometrium that's growing outside of the uterus could be spreading or growing more. So pay attention if as you get older, as if periods get painful, that's something to be aware of as well.
Yeah. And then a third one is pain during sex. So if there's ever like a deep, sharp, lingering pain, this is actually a really, really common way that people then learn they have endometriosis. What's frustrating, I would say, about this one, though, too, is that for people who aren't having sex, they can go undiagnosed even longer because this is one of those moments where all of a sudden it can be a little bit of like a, hey, something might be going on.
For women or people who don't have penetrative sex either.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What I would also say as well is, again, endo and the diagnosis of it conflicts so much with what we're told as women growing up or what we're just aware of culturally. Like, for instance, we were told, or I was told, that sex could be painful for women sometimes, especially like when you lose your virginity, you're told like it's going to hurt. So like, I think there's this common nomenclature about sex for women, especially penetrative sex, that like, yeah, sometimes that just hurts for women. That should not be the case. Sex should not hurt for you. So if this is something that is going on, no matter what you've heard, something to pay attention to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The digestive issues associated with endo, or at least like the Venn diagram of several different digestive issues that happen to coincide, your gut and endo are so intricately linked that there's a lot of crossover between things like IBS, like SIBO. Mm-hmm. They call endo belly something that is associated with endo, like constantly feeling bloated, constipated, or diarrhea, having nausea.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's anything that can cause inflammation can increase the symptoms of endometriosis. So it makes sense, like you're mentioning SIBO. It makes sense when you're talking about people who have an impact with gluten. That can feel even more extreme when you have endometriosis. But then also, too, it's interesting because of the fact that a lot of this is happening mostly around your uterus. There's also pressure from your pelvic floor on other parts of your body. So that can lead to constipation. That can lead to issues with your bowel movements, which is also fascinating. I didn't know any of that until really recently.
Wow. Another core symptom of endometriosis is chronic fatigue. We keep referencing the fact that this is an inflammatory condition. And when your body is in a constant state of inflammation, your body is working overtime all of the time. It is tired. It is in fight or fright. It's in fright, flight, and fight.
All of them.
It's the core three Fs, baby. No, but in all seriousness, I saw a TikTok from a woman who has endo, and she for 7 years went undiagnosed, less time than the average woman it takes to get diagnosed with endometriosis, far less time than the average Black woman to get diagnosed with endometriosis, which we'll talk about, and even less time than a trans person getting diagnosed with endometriosis. But she was saying that she for 7 years that this went undiagnosed, she was consistently feeling so lazy and down on herself and like she was less than her friends because she didn't have the same amount of energy. She needed more rest. She was consistently tired and just felt worn down. And when she was finally diagnosed with endo, it was so validating for her because she was able to kind of like release and be like, oh, I'm not lazy. That's what she kept describing herself as. She's like, I have a condition that makes me chronically fatigued. Yeah. So if you were consistently feeling tired, if you are feeling overworked, overwhelmed, burnt out, and especially if that's in conjunction with these other symptoms, pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's interesting too is that like There's the chronic fatigue that comes from all of these things that you've mentioned, and the fact that also a lot of times there's deep correlation between stress and endometriosis. But then also, because it takes so long for this to become diagnosed, people are just constantly having to fight for their bodies.
Yep.
And fight to be seen and fight to be heard. And so all of these things work in connection with each other, and sometimes in an unfortunate way where it just leads to things feeling even harder than they should feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Story of a woman's life, unfortunately.
Yeah, truly, truly.
As we mentioned, Laura and I have been talking about this so much and like get emotional every time we're talking about it. And we'll go through phases too. It's like the stages of grief when it comes to this conversation. It's almost like the stages of grief around being a woman. And I was mentioning to her earlier, in listening to these stories from women in our lives about endo and doing this research about endometriosis and about different women's experiences, I have such a conjunction or juxtaposition of emotions, which is one, so much pride for being a woman and hearing these women talk about this condition and still maintain a positive attitude and just trying to do their best to live a normal life. And there's this sense of resilience and strength that I think is incredible and specific to women that I just am so in love with and so in awe of. And then juxtaposed to that is there is just like this deep grief and sadness that these women have to deal with this at all and deal with it in the dark and deal with it for years being unheard and dismissed and minimized. And then just this anger at the system that has failed women to resource a disease like this and to fund it and to research it and to prioritize it in culture. So it brings up a lot of emotions, and I'm sure it does for other women as well. And I definitely am sure that it does for women with endo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi guys, here is my experience with PCOS and recently endometriosis. I have been dealing with symptoms since high school, super debilitating cramps, inconsistent periods, all the jazz, bloating. In 2018, I actually lost my period for about 8 months and thought that was amazing until I went to my doctor and realized that's not. So got tested through ultrasounds, a bunch of blood work, found out I have PCOS. Fast forward to 2022, when we started to talk about family planning. Naturally tried, did not work. So we moved to IUI, 3 failed rounds, which made us transition to IVF. We've done 2 egg retrievals and 3 transfers. In that mix, 1 failed, 1 miscarriage. And that's when we started to ask what is going on. So after my DNC, I was encouraged to check for endometriosis, which the surgery showed that I had it. Since then, we did transfer another one and had a chemical pregnancy. And now is where we're getting a little more aggressive. So we're down to our last embryo, and we are currently taking Lupron to reduce inflammation. And we're just hoping that this will really help clear out. So one of my biggest things I've learned is how much inflammation impacts everything. I've personally noticed flares with caffeine, alcohol, gluten, sugar, and stress. So I've been doing my best to minimize and manage those. And honestly, I wish more women knew that you don't have to have extreme symptoms to know something is going on. And many people I know have what's silent endo. And so if something feels off, trust your body, keep pushing for answers, and advocate for yourself. Thank you guys for doing this.
Going back to the symptoms, the 6th one, and I think potentially one of the most devastating ones for many women, is infertility or difficulty conceiving. I've spoken with a lot of women who didn't know that they had endometriosis until they started trying to have a baby and didn't understand why or what was happening and why it was so difficult. So if you have experienced something similar, trying to conceive or having difficulty conceiving, this is absolutely a marker to take to your doctor and just explore further. And what I would say is, what's tricky about endo, one of the many things, is that some people have severe endometriosis with minimal pain, and others have excruciating pain with less visibility of the disease. So silent endo is something that many, many women have, which is endometriosis and all the ramifications that go along with being diagnosed with that condition, but without the visible symptoms. So it does take trying to conceive before they identify the fact that they have this and why it might be harder for them to have a baby. But what I will say is that I don't want anyone to walk away from this episode feeling despair or feeling like all is lost. If you are someone who wants to have a baby and you have endometriosis, you absolutely have an opportunity to be a mom and to have a baby. It is 30 to 50% of women experience difficulty getting pregnant or some version of infertility. And even for those women who are experiencing that, there are options to explore, whether that is different reproductive paths or IVF or IUI. And we're not going to dive into that so much today, that specific subset of endo, just because we're not well-versed on it enough, but I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, there are many women who have endometriosis who can conceive and have children.
Yes.
So there's, like, to your point, there's many versions of endometriosis. And I think what's interesting too is that it's actually a good transition to talk about diagnosis, is that a lot of people find out that they have endometriosis when they are going through fertility issues.
Yep.
That becomes the moment where there's a sort of push to dive in more. So that's also part of the reason why there's that large correlation. But to your point, there's options and hope for a lot of people, which is great. But I think it's a good transition to talk about diagnosis. One of the wild things about endometriosis is that the average diagnosis time is 7 to 9 years.
Imagine experiencing anything
for seven to nine years.
Anything in your life. It is such a long time, but imagining then experiencing chronic and debilitating pain that affects your day-to-day life for 9 years and not feeling heard or seen or understood.
Yeah. And then for Black women, it's longer than that. For Black women specifically, it's an average of 12 years. So 10 to 13 years for the average Black woman to get their diagnosis that they have endometriosis. It's,
yeah,
truly. And that could be a whole other episode too.
Like, and it will.
Like, it will be, like, specifically us diving into racism within the health system and specifically how Black women are constantly just being overlooked and being underserved. But what's interesting in regards to endometriosis too is that 1% of diagnoses are Black women, which literally doesn't make sense. That just shows that there are probably so many women in general who haven't gotten an official diagnosis, but specifically so many Black women who have not had the official diagnosis to know what's going on with their bodies.
It's so infuriating, and it's just a grave disservice to women, to Black women specifically. And I think most people who would be listening to this podcast are at least generally aware of the fact that Black women are the least heard subset of society, of people in society, in the medical system. They're the ones who are constantly overlooked, misdiagnosed. They're the women who are dying most in childbirth because their pain is not recognized or heard. And it's disgusting.
Absolutely. And there are women who go 15, 20, 25 years before getting their diagnosis. And there's a couple of reasons why this is happening. One of the first things, we already talked about it, it's we normalize women's pain as a society. We say that periods are painful. It just is what it is. Take your heating pad, take your Tylenol, move forward. Reminder that it's not normal. It shouldn't be considered normal at all.
And I think too, when it comes to that, like when we have periods, there is, I think too, when we're talking about normalizing period pain, you experiencing your period is so singular and me experiencing my period is so singular. We each only have our own experience. So there's nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, totally.
So like I could be sitting here having like a mild cramp and maybe just like and be talking about it. And then you would hear that and think like, oh yeah, this cramping is normal. Meanwhile, you're over there potentially having endo level pain where that cramping is debilitating to the point that you can't walk.
Right.
And yet it's one of one. So the more that we talk about this and open up the conversation within our own circles, with our friends, with our sisters, with our moms, with our daughters, and with people in our life outside of just our female circles, because a woman's health issue does not just affect women, it affects society as a whole. But this fact that we don't talk about periods only perpetuates the silence and the stigma around this.
Right.
There's so many women, again, who grow up not knowing if the pain that they feel is normal, but it's because talking about periods is stigmatized.
Right.
So there's even one of the doctors who is one of the main researchers of endometriosis. She said that it was a contributing factor in why she didn't start pursuing this as her main focus of research until later on in life, because she was embarrassed to talk about periods at work, which is just so crazy.
Yeah.
So again, it's the reason why we are here, to have this conversation be normalized, be a point in conversation with friends that isn't taboo, that isn't stigmatized, that isn't TMI. One, we should be talking about this for our own health and to be able to optimize our lives and our cycles, obviously. But we need to be talking about this to save our own lives as well.
Totally. 100%. 100%. Yeah. Just even starting the conversation can create more awareness about this.
Yes. There's also a lack of education even among doctors. Endometriosis is so wildly under-researched and underfunded that it is infuriating. For context, Endo receives about $16 to $28 million a year in funding. And keep in mind, this is a condition that affects 10% of women. For comparison, diabetes, which affects roughly the same number of people, gets $1.1 billion with a B dollars in funding per year.
It's a lot of money.
Compared to $16 million. So it's not for endometriosis funding. So it's not surprising because women are underserved in society, especially in the medical realm. On average, diseases affecting only women as opposed to women and men get 75% less funding than would be expected if it was a disease that affects women and men.
It's bonkers.
Male pattern baldness has more research and funding than endometriosis.
It's crazy.
What's interesting is the pain level of endo. It's described as one of the most top 10 painful diseases in existence. The pain is on par or greater than a heart attack, then kidney stones, and then giving birth. And yet we are still not giving it money. We are not giving it research. And the fact is that the fact is that cures and treatments come from research.
Right.
So the reason that it continues to be misunderstood is because it's underfunded and under-researched.
Right. And so that's, I think, a huge part of it. Like what you just mentioned is the fact that, especially because if doctors don't have access to this information, or rather, if doctors aren't actively seeking this information, like if their community isn't actively having this become a part of everyday conversation, then things are just going to be underseen and not seen. And so for a lot of times, women have to see a specialist to be able to know whether or not they even should pursue trying to understand if they have endometriosis. And so a lot of it, too, is that it really depends on like doctors, like what their community is. And because this isn't something that is highly funded and because it isn't something that a lot of people talk about, it just goes under the radar for a lot of people.
And we would encourage you to see or seek out a specialist for endometriosis if you think that this is something that you are dealing with, or if you have been dismissed by another doctor. I think especially if you have gone into your typical gyno, or you've gone to the urgent care with pain, or the ER, which friends of mine have gone into the ER and have been dismissed or talked down to or misunderstood, or you've been dealing with pain that is chronic, please seek out an endometriosis specialist, because even doctors specializing in gynecology are not as well versed in endometriosis as they should be. So even a regular gynecologist can dismiss or misdiagnose this in a way that can be detrimental for women.
Yeah.
So seek specialized care if you're able to.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like double click on the if you're able to, because a lot of these specialists are not covered by insurance and a lot of people don't have insurance. So the unfortunate thing is that a specialist is the most likely way to receive a diagnosis, but a lot of people don't have access to that.
Yep.
And so, again, it's just another part of this larger issue. But it's just something that a lot of literally medical professionals will not be able to see.
Yep. So again, one more reason why that diagnosis can trickle up to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh, just touching on the research aspect again and how this is funded or not funded, there are bright spots in this, and at least movement towards change in the spectrum of endometriosis being funded. In 2020, Congresswoman from Iowa, Abby Finkenauer, who has endometriosis herself, took to Congress to speak on her own experience, and she increased funding by double, I believe it was, which is amazing. We should be increasing it by tenfold, but we'll take steps where we can. The researcher that I mentioned earlier, who didn't pursue endometriosis as her core focal point in her studies and in her work until later in life, is Linda Griffith. She's a biological mechanical engineer at IMT, and her and her team are making really great strides in endo right now, where they're growing the tissue in the lab and trying to categorize it into stages. So stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, a la how we approach cancer research. So just trying to find a way to normalize and track it in a way that'll give us more insight into how it's happening, why it's happening, and how we can treat and cure it. And we'd be remiss not to offer donation options for people who are interested in putting their money towards this as well. We don't believe that we as women should be one of one to fund our own medical research, but we want to give options for people in case they're interested in putting their money towards this. Donation options include the Endometriosis Foundation of America, Endometriosis Association, and World Endometriosis Research Foundation, otherwise known as WERF, which is something that I really like.
Yep.
But so those are options if you're interested in giving back as well, and we'll drop those in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Third reason that endo takes so long to diagnose is it requires surgery to diagnose it. The only definitive way to diagnose endometriosis is through a laparoscopy, which is a surgical procedure.
Yeah. So have to go under to be able to learn whether or not you have this, which again is not available to a lot of people, that can feel like such a huge, it is a huge thing to take on.
Yes.
Just to learn if you have something or not. And so what happens is a lot of people, you know, they have all of these symptoms that we've talked about, and instead they're either put on birth control, they're told to wait and see. Sometimes they're diagnosed with IBS or anxiety or just have bad periods. I know some women who are just given, they just have to take anxiety medication forever. And that's just, they're just told that's what it is. They have to just manage their stress that way. And so all of these band-aids that don't even come close to the issue. There is a world where in some situations on an ultrasound, you can see some of the scarring, you can see some things that happen from endometriosis. That being said, because of what we just talked about, not every doctor or gynecologist can even notice it or even knows what to do when they see it. So that's also just something interesting that I learned throughout this process too, is that if there's anything weird on an ultrasound, you can take those photos and bring them elsewhere. And that can also be another way to try to get another opinion about what's going on.
Yeah. And one more reason to seek out specialized care as well, because so many people are not versed in endometriosis. And if you're going to see an ENT or something like that, who's looking at your eyes or your throat and you've got endo tissue showing up in your lungs, that person likely isn't going to be able to recognize the fact that it's endo tissue unless they are educated in endo, which is not commonplace these days. So just even more kind of trap doors for women to fall into on this pathway to diagnosis. But we're out here and we're trying to make sure that people know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then I think too, because specifically endometriosis is a full body condition, there's a lot of different symptoms and it looks very different for a lot of people.
Yes.
And it's because of the overlap with other conditions that can make this really, really challenging to diagnose. So there's a lot of symptom overlap with conditions like IBS, with SIBO, with PCOS, with pelvic floor dysfunction, as we've talked about. And so a lot of times there can be these solutions that are maybe tackling a very small piece of what's happening. But again, there's a full body experience that is a lot of times being overlooked.
And then finally, I think, and this is an underlying or umbrella issue as to why it takes so long to get diagnosed, no matter what else is going on, and that is because of medical gaslighting.
Yes.
Last week, I talked about a story where I experienced this on a smaller scale with a gyno appointment that I had and how destabilizing that was for me one time. But women who are consistently going into the doctor or different doctors or ER or pain specialists, asking for help, asking for answers, expressing what's going on, and being dismissed as you're fine, you're being dramatic, you have a low pain tolerance, you should try Advil, you should try a heating pack, is just one, so insulting, but also two, so defective to mental health and deteriorative over the years of women consistently being told that they're wrong or that they're making something up or that their pain is not real. So if this is something that you've experienced, if you've gone to a doctor and you've felt dismissed, you haven't felt heard, we're here to tell you that your pain is real, it is valid, and please try to seek out a second opinion and be voracious in your demand for care, because this is something that can make the process drag on for years and years and years.
Something I wish I knew about my endo diagnosis was how much shame would come with it. Not just the pain, but feeling like I had to apologize for my body all the time, in relationships, in daily life, on the job, for the utter lack of control I had over my own body.
we've talked about symptoms, we've talked about what it is, and we've talked about the reasons that it takes so long for women to get diagnosed. But let's talk about treatments. There is no cure for endometriosis, but there are different ways to manage it. One of the ways to manage it that is probably the most common is with hormonal treatments like hormone suppression therapies, but more commonly birth control. So the pill or an IUD. Many women find success with using birth control as a means for pain management and just management of the disease itself because it suppresses the body's natural flux of hormones that bring about menstruation, obviously. And for many women with endo, menstruation, the luteal phase and the menstrual phase are the ones that cause the most pain and inflammation, as we mentioned, because this endo tissue acts as the uterine lining does, and it swells, it sheds, it bleeds in the same way that it does when you have your period. So if we are able to suppress that within the pelvic area specifically, many women find relief in that for their endo overall, which is amazing. There's also downsides to birth control, obviously, as there's downsides to any kind of prescription medication. One factoid that I learned in this research process that just blew my absolute mind was the amount of medication some women with endo need to take in relation to birth control. So one pill for endometriosis, which I believe women take daily, can be equal to an entire pack of birth control, which is just
insane,
mind-boggling for me. As someone who used to be like a shitty 20-year-old and like mess up my birth control pill count on a day-to-day basis, if I forgot to take it one day, I would then be like, oh, I'll just take three today. And even then, it would mess up my hormones and my body so much that I can't imagine taking an entire pack of birth control in one day. So that is just something to be aware of and something to have a really, really careful conversation with your doctor about. And another conversation that needs to be had with doctors is the side effects of birth control, especially birth control taken at that level, because severe depression and even suicidal ideation is a very real side effect with some birth controls. I listened to a story from a woman on a podcast about endometriosis who said that she'd never experienced any form of depression. And she was sunk so deep into a depressive episode when starting to take birth control after not having a conversation with her practitioner about side effects, that she wound up like ideating so severely about suicide that she found herself one day in a gun store, and she never thought about it before. And that was her turnkey moment to be like, what's going on with me? This isn't normal.
Yeah.
So that just breaks my heart too. On top of dealing with this pain, you're then given a course of medication that can send you down another rabbit hole of mental health struggle. So please, please, please be aware of that and have really close and careful, conscientious conversations with your doctor. And then one other aspect of hormonal birth control that is important to talk about is that this is not a one-size-fits-all for women with endo. This does not always work for women with endo. Sometimes it suppresses irregularities with menstruation. So people find they have more regular periods or lighter periods, which is great because some women with endo have really, really heavy periods and irregular periods. But then women who found relief in the regularity or the heaviness of their periods didn't find relief with the pain. So it's not as though this is a sticker of approval for everybody with endo.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Another way to help manage is hormone suppression therapies. So these can help when it comes to reducing or stopping menstruation, but it can also help when it comes to slowing the growth of the endometrial tissue. One of the things that's really interesting about endometriosis is that it creates an extreme increase in estrogen. So the lesions that are created in your uterus and beyond, they create more estrogen. I've learned this.
Oh.
So your body is creating more estrogen, and that estrogen promotes the growth, the inflammation, and the survival of all of those lesions. And so that's one of the reasons why too hormonal birth control can be a solution, or not a solution, but a helpful tool.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is about how do you also reduce the amount of estrogen in your body, because that's actually creating more of an issue when it comes to the inflammation. So specifically, hormone suppression therapies can also be a way to help when it comes to some of those symptoms.
Another course of treatment for endometriosis is simply pain management. Unfortunately, this irritates me beyond measure because managing pain is not the same thing as treating the root cause of the issue, but it is obviously, it's something that we have to do. So over-the-counter pain medication, obviously Advil, Motrin, Tylenol, this is important. Prescription medications are also available, and you need to talk to your doctor about this because if you have endo, because so often the level of pain that you experience is not normal to be to be helped or fixed with a dose of Advil over the counter. So there are deeper pain medications that you can acquire through your doctor. And there's also one option is nerve blocks as well, which is a friend of mine has started to utilize. There are shots that you can take. We just don't want you to wind up in urgent care every time this happens, getting shots of Dilaudid, which is double the amount of what morphine is, from what I heard from a friend. And she had this experience and then still wasn't even able to walk out of the ER afterwards and was dismissed as, well, there's nothing that we can see that is wrong with you. So I think that you should be fine to go home.
Awful.
Infuriating.
Awful.
Then a third way to treat endo, and this is what is seen as kind of the gold standard, is excision surgery. So this is where a surgeon removes the endometrial-like tissue from where it does not belong. So it's gold standard in treatment, but also we realize that gold standard still means you are taking time off of work, off of home, spending money, getting a surgery, which is never, ever something that it should be looked at as easy. But there's two kind of surgeries that you can get for endo. One is an excision, which means cutting it out. This is the best of outcomes typically. And the other is called an ablation, which is burning it. Often less effective, but it's less invasive and still an option. And I think everything is obviously dependent on what type of endo you have, where you have it, and what the doctor can see.
Yeah, but also too, one thing I actually learned when listening to a podcast this week, I was listening to a podcast that was hosted by Fawn Walker, who is a woman who actually wrote the book Healing in the Fight, A Black Woman's Journey with Endometriosis and Radical Self-Care. One of the parts of the discussion that they were talking about is that there's these two surgical options. A lot of times what doctors sometimes push for is ablation, which is often less effective. And the reason why is because ablation can be faster. Like that can be done sometimes within an hour, whereas the excision can take sometimes over 3 hours. And a lot of times the payment is exactly the same. So that's just something that I thought was really fascinating, is that it's worth, even when you find, you know, the person who's going to be helping treat you, really doubling down and trying to understand which of these outcomes is best, because there is sometimes something else underneath the surface.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm hearing here is ask your doctor what is best, not what is easiest.
Yes, exactly.
And, but even if this is a gold standard of treatment for endo, obviously there's always downsides.
Even if you get the surgery, it doesn't mean that it's gone for good. It can still grow back.
I know multiple women who have had multiple surgeries. And even if you remove the tissue, it does not necessarily mean that you will be pain-free. Also, it's not always covered by insurance. It can be if it is quote-unquote medically necessary, but that's subjective. And oftentimes you need proof of prior treatments, proof of pain, and to go see specialists who are not always in network, even if you have insurance. So women often wind up paying $4,000 to $5,000 out of pocket for excisions, even if they have insurance. And that's not to mention what a cost looks like if you don't have insurance. We had a friend who said, thank God I have incredible insurance, because if I didn't, the surgery that I had would have been $150,000.
It's awful.
And one of the more final treatments for endometriosis is a hysterectomy, which is the removal of the uterus, which obviously removes the body's ability to have a menstrual cycle, therefore minimizing the ebb and flow of hormones and shedding of the uterine lining, which can then affect the shedding of endo in the body. So many cons to this. This is such a serious and final step that many women take. And I also want to validate the women who choose this path, because they know their bodies best. And I've also heard of women being minimized when wanting to pursue this as an option, hearing from doctors saying, oh, you don't know what you want. That's such a wild step to take. And it's so final, you won't be able to have kids. And what I will say is, if a woman is experiencing such intense and debilitating and chronic endo pain that they want to explore having a hysterectomy, that's even more reason to listen to women.
Amen. Amen.
This isn't necessarily treatment for endo itself, but I just want to also call out that there is fertility support for women who are experiencing infertility in their endo journey. And the reason that this sometimes happens, just as an FYI, and again, this isn't something that Lauren and I are incredibly well educated on, so I can only speak to it from a high level, but the scar tissue and inflammation that is formed and that is a byproduct of endometriosis can block pathways to successful fertilization of the egg or implantation. So there can often be cysts or tissue on ovaries that can damage them. And scar tissue can actually fuse reproductive organs together. And inflammation in general is a hindrance to fertility. And what I will say too is I just want to pause and make sure that we are giving as much love and respect and reverence to the women who are out here and trying to get pregnant, to have a baby, to create the family that they want while also dealing with endometriosis. Again, we've heard from friends where I'm just like the strength and resilience that I hear in their voices and even and like the remaining positivity that they have in the face of something that is so difficult and can be so devastating and heartbreaking is incredible. And I'm just so impressed by these women. And I just want to send like so much love and respect to anyone who makes me emotional, like going through this process.
Yeah.
I want people to know that endometriosis is not a reproductive condition. It is a full body, chronic, systemic inflammatory condition, meaning that anything that can cause inflammation in the body can lead to an endometriosis flare-up. So that can be stress, lack of sleep, alcohol, inflammatory foods, hormonal shifts. And an endometriosis flare-up is one of the most painful conditions in the world. There are times when I need, you know, prescription grade painkillers and nerve blockers just to be able to function. And it's not bad period cramps. I mean, sometimes I get an endometriosis flare and I don't even have my period. It can be from a whole host of other inflammatory things that have led to that moment. And it feels like having the flu, like you are unable to get out of bed. Your body is so fatigued. Your muscles hurt so badly, like everything just feels so inflamed. And there is no cure. So I've even had a 5-hour surgery for my stage 4 endometriosis to rid my body of the lesions. And, you know, I'm still susceptible to flares. It has helped a lot, but there is no cure. So I know that that may grow back and I may have to have another surgery. And a lot of women can't afford the surgery.
It's been really amazing hearing people share their stories and just hearing the overall resilience of continuing to fight to get a diagnosis, continuing to fight to be able to grow a family if you want to.
Yep.
We're just like, I don't know, it just makes me proud to be a woman in general.
Oh, I'm always so proud to be a woman, but especially like when we're, it's easier to be proud to be a woman when we're seeing things only that are imbued in strength and positivity and ease and all of these things. But it's even better and more fulfilling for me to have pride in being a woman when I see women fighting against the odds of culture and society.
Yeah.
And still just being so incredible, you know? Yeah,
totally.
But on that note, we've covered what it is, we've covered why it takes so long to get diagnosed, symptoms and treatments. We would be remiss to not talk about how lifestyle changes and holistic support is so important for women with endometriosis. And I didn't realize this even in doing the research until I started talking to all of my friends who have this and hearing what causes what we call, again, flare-ups of endo. And oftentimes it's lifestyle choices that can greatly impact you in both a positive and a negative way. So keeping in mind, like we keep talking about inflammation, which means that anti-inflammatory choices in lifestyle and nutrition are so important. So things that can, that we've heard women cause flare-ups are caffeine, are alcohol, are going out to eat so much where they don't know what exactly what the ingredients are. If you're using a lot of seed oils, if you're using a lot of inflammatory ingredients, these are things to just pay attention to. Like anything in excess that might be bad for your body could cause an endo flare up because it is an inflammatory aspect. So there are other foods that you can focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. So things like leafy greens, your kale, your spinach, any omega-3 rich foods are really good for your body. And any antioxidants, so berries, papaya, mango, things that really help to really help lower any sort of inflammation. Additionally, turmeric and ginger are great for your body. Olive oil is also great. Like avoiding seed oils, really focusing on the olive oils are really good for you. But in general, yeah, it's when we hear the correlation of gut health and hear the correlation of SIBO, for instance, a lot of those things are tied to foods that are inflammatory.
Yeah.
And so being able to focus on a diet that is instead increasing those foods that help with inflammation, it's great to hear that can help a lot of people.
What I would also say too is if you are suffering from endo or if you think this might be something that you want to look into getting a diagnosis for, pay attention to how your body feels and when it feels bad or good. For instance, if you're starting to notice these flare-ups, can you track them or connect them to something that you have either ingested or done recently in your life? Like I had a friend who started to notice anytime she drank alcohol, she would have a flare up the next day that made her feel flu-like. I also heard from another woman that caffeine was something that made her inflammation worse. So if you can start to pay attention and kind of track or be conscious about what you're putting in your body and how that's affecting your body, it could really, really help you on your journey to making sure that you're minimizing anything inflammatory.
Yeah, it's a great call.
And again, highly processed foods, excess sugar, alcohol, especially during your luteal and menstrual phases, and red meat for some people is very inflammatory. So these are just like places to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And then tied to that too, another place that people can focus on is specifically gut health. There's a strong connection and correlation between estrogen metabolism and your gut microbiome. So I've mentioned there's a lot of excess estrogen that can happen when you have endometriosis. And so by focusing on specifically trying to support a healthy gut, almost doing like the treatments of a leaky gut, I've heard can be really helpful for some people. And so that means increasing certain types of foods or increasing certain types of nutrients. So things like fiber, having more fiber, having more fermented foods, probiotics, your trace minerals. Those are all things that can help support the gut, which can ultimately then help some of the symptoms that people may be feeling.
Also, I think when I started learning about gut health and like ways to strengthen your gut, there's long lists of things. I'm like, wait, what is it? What fermented food? When and how do I eat that? Honestly, I have sauerkraut during the day. I love like a few bites of sauerkraut, a few bites of kimchi. Yogurt is really good for you. Yep. Kefir, which is a drink, like a yogurt style drink that for me, I get the raspberry flavored one. It tastes like a smoothie. There are ways to insert more fermented and fibrous foods into your diet in ways that feel like less scary or all encompassing that I think are just like kind of like easy ticks. Like next time you're grocery shopping, pick up a jar of sauerkraut and just keep it in your fridge. When you sit in there, like have a bite a day.
Yeah, no, I love that. And actually it's funny. When I was actually breastfeeding, I had a lactation consultant who we were focusing on my gut health. Long story short, I was feeling nauseous when breastfeeding.
Okay.
And so we figured it was a gut thing. And one of the things that I loved about her philosophy was when it comes to gut health, there's a world where we can remove a lot of things and that can be really challenging. It's hard to like take things out of your diet. But like you were just saying, her philosophy was just increase all the good things.
Yeah.
And you should be able to see the benefits.
So exactly. Oh, I love that. I love that. It's just like a philosophy for life in general.
Right.
Increase the good things.
Exactly. It's like you don't have to cut everything out, but instead increase all the good stuff. So
yep.
I love what you're saying. It's like, if you can like find a way to have some extra yogurt, have some extra sauerkraut, it's like those little things can actually have a really big impact.
Absolutely. And then the next two things I think are very linked, which is cycle syncing and nervous system regulation.
Yeah.
What I'll say is that when I was going to therapy and my therapist was like, hey, you really need to work on regulating your nervous system. I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, is that a real thing? Because what nervous system regulation usually entails is kind of like less tangible, but longer term practices to regulate stress and fatigue in your life, like breath work, like meditation, like time in nature, like literally grounding, which means going out and touching grass. Journaling, reading, just taking quiet moments. And I think as an abstract idea, it can seem so far away and like it's not going to really help, which is how I felt when it was prescribed to me by my therapist.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this really going to do? And also you don't see an immediate outcome from it. So I think it can seem like a little bit silly. However, what I will say is that the practice of doing this, of regulating your nervous system, of calming your body down is essentially what it is in different ways. Breathwork, meditation, again, journaling, these things yoga, if you will. I saw such a difference in my mental health. And I really think that this is, again, an easy way to start of adding the good stuff.
Yeah.
Take 10 minutes in the morning where you're using an app like Open, which is a meditation app, or Calm, you can find them on YouTube for free.
Yeah.
Lauren and I both subscribe to these practices and absolutely love it. And I personally can tell when I fall off of it.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Like what you said is so important. It's like, you're right. It's like, it can feel sometimes like, is this actually going to do anything? But the fact that we know scientifically, if you slow down your breath, your stress lowers.
Yeah.
Like that is just fact.
Yep.
And so it can take a long time to feel like, okay, how am I going to regulate my entire nervous system that can feel wildly overwhelming?
I was just going to say, it feels overwhelming too. And it's like, oh, what? It's my job to make sure that my entire body and inner cortisol levels are just good. Right.
But to that point, the good news is that even taking the time to do something small for 30 seconds, for 2 minutes, that actually has an impact right now.
Yep.
And so for me, at least, that can always be helpful. Just that sort of sense of like, okay, well, I know at least if I take 2 minutes to do some breath work, I'm going to physically feel that.
Yep.
Which is huge. I think what's we've talked about too is like what's challenging is that like this moment of time where, you know, you may be feeling unheard or feeling unseen can naturally just lead to more stress.
Absolutely.
Birth control can lead to more stress. All of these things can like add to a more challenging sort of mental health state. So we want to acknowledge that and the nervous system regulation and some of those tools that can help with that can hopefully make the day-to-day feel a little bit easier.
No, it's such a
moment. It's really easier.
Fucking catch 22.
It really is.
Yeah, it's like, you need to lower your stress in order to navigate this disease. But the disease itself and even some of the pathways for medication cause inherently more stress in your life and in your body.
Yeah.
Being a woman is not for the faint of heart, man. No. So if you're out there, again, dealing with this, like it's why Lauren and I have got so emotional talking about this as much as we've been researching it and talking with friends. It's just like, I'm in awe of women who are dealing with this and dealing with it every single day and dealing with it quietly too. So many of the friends that we talk to about this, we're like, we didn't know that you had endometriosis.
Yeah.
Like, and didn't know that you were dealing with it every single day.
Every day.
And that you've had surgery for it and that you're on this medication for it and that you're consistently in and out of like the urgent care and ER. These are just women in our lives that look to be living like healthy, normal lives. Like I've never heard them complain once about pain, about fatigue.
Yeah.
And it's like, one, it's wild, it's impressive. And two, I want women to talk about it more. I want to know when you're fatigued. I want to know when you're going through stress. I want to know when you're in pain. Yeah. And I also, so if this is something that you are dealing with as well, like talk about it, speak on it, talk to us about it. This is a great place. Like we're always interested in comments and stories and experiences from women.
Yeah, I have a friend who has endometriosis. She got surgery last year and she is a public health expert and is also a poet. And she wrote a poem about the question of, are you stressed? Because she was being asked that so many times during her fight to figure out what was happening to her body. And there's a moment in the poem where she talks about, like, what if doctors asked a different question? Because when you hear the question, like, are you stressed? It's just like, yes, obviously. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a moment that just stuck with me where there's a line about like, I wish a doctor would ask me, it's making me emotional. Like, I wish a doctor would ask me the last time I've had a dream. Like, I wish a doctor would ask me like what it was like to wake up and have hope. Like, it's like things like that where it's just like, even that question of like, are you stressed can feel so repetitive and not mean anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just reminded me of.
We'll post that poem as well. Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
I can narrate my life in many parts. The most significant, life before diagnosis and excision surgery, and life since. My surgery transformed my body from a site of war with stage 4 and late stages of deep infiltrating endometriosis to a more liberatory zone for more easeful periods. I never admitted how much pain I was in to my loved ones because there was so much to be in pain about. For what they already knew, it was hard enough. A few months before my diagnosis, I wrote a poem called That Body, This Body, Next Body. And it's really cool to be experiencing my that body as this body with healing, knowing that despite there not yet being a cure, Several of us are banding together for our sisters and siblings with endo, wanting to make access to diagnosis and treatment more accessible for all. For far too long, endometriosis was defined by medical researchers as a, quote, white women's disease. But like many health considerations due to health inequities, it was farthest away from true. Today, while the average is narrated as 6 to 10 years to receive a diagnosis, we know for Black women and gender diverse people, it can take upwards of 13 to 16, with my own story being upwards of 20. If it wasn't for my spiritual counsel at Double Love Experience Church, my sisters of YMB community and mutual aid through Mom and with Endo and a wildly successful GoFundMe, I would be stuck in that body that I didn't know could get so much better.
Having this conversation is an emotional one. It's an emotional one for women, and it should be emotional for everyone who's learning about this. It should be infuriating. It should be deeply saddening. And it also should be validating for women who are experiencing this. And I hope that at the end of the day, this episode does its job in validating your pain, in your experience, and potentially offering, it's not solutions, because this is a chronic illness that affects a day-to-day life, but at least there are spaces to talk about it. There are routes to take in advocating for your care. There are specialists to seek out. There are people that will listen to you. And then there are holistic elements to integrate into your life on top of the different medical treatment options that can be helpful in minimizing stress and inflammation, and thus hopefully minimizing the aspects that endo kind of just wreaks havoc on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, in general, we wanted to talk about this because it's Endometriosis Awareness Month, but also because this impacts so many women and it's not talked about enough. That was the intention of us bringing this conversation to light. We're so grateful for all of the women who shared their stories and have allowed us to share them with all of you too.
We hope that you guys resonated with those stories as much as we did, because collecting those and also being gifted with those, which is inherently such a vulnerable space to share, felt really meaningful to us. So I hope that you guys really appreciated hearing different voices on this episode as well.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that has become just a strong reminder when talking about this is that as women, we are trained to fight through pain, and we are trained to say that everything is okay, and we are trained to just like normalize things that shouldn't be normal. And if anything, like whether it's endometriosis or even something else, like this is just such, for me, has been such a good reminder of like, how can we listen to our bodies, trust our bodies, and also not have to feel like putting on a happy face is the only way to move forward and to exist in this society, because we can be mad and we have to fight. We always will. We're just designed to, again, like, as women. But it's just that reminder that because so many of us have been accustomed to having to do that every single day, that there are so many things that get underlooked.
I completely agree. Obviously, I co-sign every single bit of what Lauren just said. And I also want to acknowledge, if we haven't already, that this is an invisible disease to so many people on the outside. So can make a woman trying to express pain around something that can't be seen feel even less heard. And just because someone can't see endo from the outside does not mean that endo on the inside is affecting you in such a real way every single day. So we just want to validate any woman who has ever dealt with this.
Yeah.
We see you, we hear you, we hope that you take this and use it as a platform to speak on it yourself, to share your story, because it is so important for women to hear this, to be validated as well, if they're on the fence about wondering if they have this, and to take this to doctors, to look for a team of people that will support you and validate you as well in the medical community, because this is real. It is debilitating. It is chronic. And it affects 1 in 10 women. So you are also in no way alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say too, like, if you've listened to this episode and have thoughts, feedback, please share it. If there are ways that you want to be supported, like if you have endometriosis and there are ways that people can support you, we want to hear that and we want to share that.
Yep.
That's the goal of what we're trying to do, is to create more awareness, but to also help create more care for people. So please reach out. You can find us on YouTube. We're at InFacePod. We're on Spotify. We're also on Apple In Phase, the Cycle Syncing podcast. And then you can also follow us on TikTok and Instagram at In Phase Pod. And you can follow me. I'm at Lauren Cortizo.
And I'm at Robin Dibovic. And again, to echo what Lauren is saying, we welcome feedback. We welcome comments. We welcome questions more than anything else as well, because what I'll say is that if you have a question, I guarantee you, you're not the only one. And we'd love to know what you want to know more about. And that being said, next week, our episode is the 5 most commonly asked questions about cycle syncing that have either come from the internet or come from you directly. So your feedback is informing how we're building this podcast and where we're taking it and what we're talking about. So please, please, please give us your thoughts, give us your feedback, give us your questions, give us your concerns. If we got something wrong, we want to know. Again, we're learners and we're just doing our best out here to bring this conversation to you and to community and to women. So thank you for your help as we try to do that. And thank you for listening to today's episode.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Like, subscribe, share away, please. Bye.